Good morning. Brother Gopal is away for 2 weeks, so I'll be covering for him for 2 Sundays, today and next Sunday. I'm so sorry, but I'm afraid you will have to what? Bear with me. Someone once said, it's better to debate a question without settling it than to settle a question without debating it. Zophar debated twice with Job, but as we shall see, in each of these two debates, they debated a question without settling it. We have Roman numeral 1, Zophar's first debate with Job. Zophar was evidently the youngest of Job's 3 friends. His name meant young bird. He was the most abrasive and caustic of Job's friends. Letter A. Zophar confronted Job as being simple-minded. This is in Job chapter 11. William Foster writes, Prometheus is fabled to have offended Jupiter by befriending mankind and teaching them the arts. The angry Job caused him to be chained to a rock on Mount Caucasus. There a vulture preyed upon his liver, which was renewed every day. He might have freed himself at any time from his cruel torture, but this he disdained to do. He has therefore become the symbol of magnanimous endurance of unmerited suffering. Prometheus suffered because he befriended mankind and taught them the arts. But Job did not suffer because he befriended others and taught them the arts. Zophar believed that Job's blatant sinfulness had brought on his sufferings. This is found at the beginning of Job chapter 11. But let us study the whole of Job 11 to have a better idea of what is happening here. Then answered Zophar the Naamathite and said, should not the multitude of words be answered? And should a man full of talk be justified? Should thy lies make men hold their peace? And when thou mockest, shall no man make thee ashamed? For thou hast said, my doctrine is pure, and I am clean in thine eyes. Again, Zophar believed that Job's blatant sinfulness had brought on his sufferings. Zophar got straight to the point with Job and didn't try to spare his feelings. But oh, that God would speak and open his lips against thee, and that he would show thee the secrets of wisdom, that they are double to that which is. Know therefore that God exacteth of thee less than thine iniquity deserveth. What did Zophar conclude about Job's suffering? That it was probably far less than he deserved. Zophar abrasively told Job that his suffering was far less than he probably deserved. Canst thou, by searching, find out God? Canst thou find out the Almighty unto perfection? It is as high as heaven. What canst thou do? Deeper than hell. What canst thou know? The measure thereof is longer than the earth and broader than the sea. Zophar challenged what he thought was Job's claim that God had judged him wrongly. Zophar's challenge came in a series of questions designed to show that God's wisdom is far beyond any person's grasp. If he cut off and shut up or gather together, then who can hinder him? For he knoweth vain men, he seeth wickedness also, will he not then consider it? When God judges the wicked, no one can stop him nor question him. For vain men would be wise, though man be born like a wild ass's colt. Zophar was guilty of dogmatism. He based his view of Job on nothing but his own opinion. And in his opinion, Job was a vain man or a simple-minded man. The Hebrew term conveys the idea of emptiness. In other words, in Zophar's opinion, Job's mind was like an empty jar or an uncultivated field. Zophar accused Job of lacking understanding and insight. Zophar also implied in verse 12 that Job was likely to attain wisdom as a donkey is likely to give birth to a person. Zophar considered it impossible for Job to be wise in his current mindset. He needed to take steps to gain true wisdom. If iniquity be in thine hand, put it far away. This statement was a barb in Zophar's confrontation of Job. In essence, Zophar, the younger man, clearly called upon Job, the older, perfect man, to repent. For then shalt thou lift up thy face without spot, yea, thou shalt be steadfast and shalt not fear, because thou shalt forget thy misery, and remember it as waters that pass away. And thine age shall be clearer than the noonday. Thou shalt shine forth. Thou shalt be as the morning. And thou shalt be secure, because there is hope. Yea, thou shalt think about thee, and thou shalt take thy rest in safety. Also thou shalt lie down, and none shall make thee afraid. Yea, many shall make suit unto thee. Zophar promised Job that if he repented, he will be healed, released from his fear, and restored to his place of prominence by God. But if Job had followed Zophar's advice, that would have triggered a victory for Satan in Job's life. Because Job would be simply obeying and serving God for the blessings he offers, that is what Satan accused him of doing in the first place. For the eyes of the wicked shall fail, and they shall not escape, and their hope shall be as the giving up of the ghost. Zophar ended his opening speech with a warning to Job that the wicked shall not escape God's punishment. Zophar wanted Job to give in and repent of whatever wickedness he must have committed. Letter B. Job responded in defense. Job responded in defense. This is in Job chapters 12 to 14. Have you ever defended yourself? Have you ever defended yourself? What is self-defense? A little guy was sitting in a restaurant eating his meal and minding his own business, when all of a sudden a great big man came and whack, knocked him off his chair and said, "That was a karate chop from Korea." The little guy thought, "Ouch," but got back up on his chair and started eating and minding his own business again. Then all of a sudden, whack, the big guy knocked him down again and said, "That was a judo chop from Japan." The little guy had had enough of that, so he left and was gone for about a half hour or so. When he came back, whack, he knocked the big man down from his chair and out cold. Little guy looked at the people around him and said, "When he comes to, tell him that was a crowbar for Walmart." No, that's vengeance. That's not self-defense. How about the sign on the fence giving all fair warning? "This property protected by poverty. There's nothing here worth stealing." No, that's not self-defense. That's defending your property. Self-defense is like this. One man giving the perfect reason for speeding when he was pulled over by a state highway patrolman. He said, "But officer, I wasn't speeding. I was just trying to stay a safe distance ahead of the truck in back of me." The man was defending himself from the truck behind. Defensive speeding. Job also defended himself. He reacted strongly to Zophar's dogmatic and heartless confrontation. Although he never lost his spiritual integrity or cursed God, Job retorted to Zophar while maintaining his innocence. It is significant to note that Job's pride began to surface more and more during these cycles of debate, as Job felt compelled to vindicate himself before other men. He also voiced his doubts, confused thoughts, and hurt spirit. Although Job's suffering was not a chastisement for sin, it brought to the surface some latent pride that Job would have to deal with. In this sense, Job's trials functioned as a refining fire. Let's first study Job chapter 12. "No doubt, but ye are the people, and wisdom shall die with you." Job sarcastically told Zophar and the other two friends that wisdom would end with their death. Job conveyed to them that though they point out how no one can approach the wisdom of God, they themselves speak as if they are the authorities on life. "But I have understanding as well as you. I am not inferior to you. Yea, who knoweth not such things as these?" Job added that he too has wisdom. By doing so, he countered Zophar's notion that Job was an empty-headed man. "I'm as one mocked of his neighbor, who calleth upon God, and he answereth him. The just upright man is laughed to scorn." Job again pointed out his disgrace. Though he was wise and righteous, he had become a laughing stock. "He that is ready to slip with his feet is as a lamb despised in the thought of him that is at ease." Job had endured the ridicule of those who were at ease. "The tabernacles of robbers prosper, and they that provoke God are secure, into whose hands God bringeth abundantly." All the while, the tents of the robbers prospered, particularly the tents of those who stole Job's flocks and herds. This last point served as a counter-argument to his friends' belief that the wicked will always suffer. "But ask now the beasts, and they shall teach thee, and the fowls of the air, and they shall tell thee. Or speak to the earth, and it shall teach thee, and the fishes of the sea shall declare unto thee. Who knoweth not in all these that the hand of the Lord hath wrought this? In whose hand is the soul of every living thing and the breath of all mankind? Does not the ear try words and the mouth taste his meat?" Job turned the conversation toward instruction in wisdom. He pointed out that creation offers lessons in wisdom. Specifically, God directs the life and holds the breath of every living creature. "With the ancient is wisdom, and in length of days understanding." God has given people the ability to discern wisdom. Let's all read aloud the next 13 verses. "With him is wisdom and strength." Let's all read aloud. "With him is wisdom and strength. He has counsel and understanding. Behold, he breaketh down, and he cannot be built again. He shutteth up a man, and there can be no opening. Behold, he withholdeth the waters, and they dry up. Also, he sendeth them out, and they overturn the earth. With him is strength and wisdom. They deceive, the deceiver are his. He leadeth counselors away spoiled, and maketh the judges fools. He looseth the bond of kings, and girdeth their loins with a girdle. He leadeth princes away spoiled, and overthroweth the mighty. He removeth away the speech of the trusty, and taketh away the understanding of the aged. He poureth contempt upon princes, and weakeneth the strength of the mighty. He discovereth deep things out of darkness, and brings out to light the shadow of death. He increaseth the nations, and destroyeth them. He enlargeth the nations, and straighteneth them again. He taketh away the heart of the chief of the people of the earth, and causes them to wander in the wilderness where there is no way. They grope in the dark without light, and he maketh them to stagger like a drunken man. Job continued his development of his discussion of wisdom by talking about God. In his wisdom, God is able to control the intelligent and powerful of the earth. God overwhelms kings and princes with destructive forces. These are found in Job chapter 12, verses 13 to 25. Job wanted his statements in these verses to provide evidence to Zophar that not all who experience trouble are empty-headed. Overall, Job made the point that the tradition of the fathers that his friends held to should not become a replacement for critical thinking. God gave man the ability to think and discern wisdom. Job's friends were wrong in dogmatically holding to the traditions of the fathers and refusing to reconsider what they believed were unshakable truths. We have God's sure, unchanging word instead of traditions as our source of wisdom. But Job and his friends didn't have that blessing at that point in history. So they had to be careful not to define God by a rigid set of axioms and proverbs that did not come from God himself. It's heavy, isn't it? A certain pastor typically taught up to 2 hours in the adult Sunday school. One Sunday he was going strong for some time when one of his regular members got up and left. A while later, the same man returned. Later, a pastor asked him where he had gone during the lesson. The member said he had gone for a weight loss program. The pastor asked why he hadn't gotten one before he came to class. The member replied, "Before I came, I didn't need one. It was a heavy lesson." It is just as heavy here, but please don't leave for weight loss program, okay? Let's move on to Job chapter 13. "Surely I will speak to the Almighty, and I desire to reason with God." Job moved from his thoughts on God's dealings with rulers and nations to pick up his complaints against his friends. His friends had neither listened to Job nor correctly defended God. So Job concluded he would rather speak to God. "But ye are forgers of lies. Ye are all physicians of no value." Job said that the three friends had created lies about God to defend their traditions. They are worthless in their efforts to help Job. "Oh, that ye would altogether hold your peace, and it should be your wisdom." Job insinuated that his three friends were fools who at least appeared to be wise if they kept their mouths shut. "Hear now my reasoning, and hearken to the pleading of my lips. Will ye speak wickedly for God, and talk deceitfully for him? Will ye accept his person? Will ye contend for God? Is it good that he should search you out? Or as one man mocketh another, do ye so mock him? He will surely reprove you, if ye do secretly accept persons. Shall not his excellency make you afraid, and his dread fall upon you?" Job elaborated on his friend's misrepresentation of God. "Your remembrances are like unto ashes, your bodies, the bodies of clay. Job compared his friends' proverbs to lifeless ashes and their answers to clay pots that eventually crumble. Job was beginning to make clear that he had no use for their help. Hold your peace. Let me alone that I may speak, and let come on me what will. Job told his friends to be quiet and let him take the course he had chosen. Wherefore do I take my flesh in my teeth and put my life in my hand? Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him, but I will maintain my own ways before him. Job wanted a hearing from God. He said in Job chapter 13, verses 14 to 15, wherefore do I take my flesh in my teeth and put my life in my hand? Why do I take my flesh in my teeth and put my life in my hand? Though he slay me, I will have no hope if God were to slay me for demanding a hearing. Why do I take my flesh in my teeth and put my life in my hand? I will have no hope if God were to slay me for demanding a hearing. Yet, will I trust in him, but I will maintain mine own ways before him. Job will never fall for the easy solutions his friends offered. He also shall be my salvation, for an hypocrite shall not come before him. Job believed he could find deliverance before God because he was not coming before God as a hypocrite. Hear diligently my speech and my declaration with your ears. Job hoped that his friends might yet hear him and support him. Behold now, I've ordered my cause. I know that I shall be justified. Job was ready to plead his case before God. How confident was Job that he would win his case with God? Job said that he knew he would be acquitted. Who is he that will plead with me? For now, if I hold my tongue, I shall give up the ghost. Job believed no one, not even God, could dispute him. Though if God were to oppose him, he knew it could cost him his life. Only do not two things unto me, then will I not hide myself from thee. Withdraw thy hand far from me, and let not thy dread make me afraid. Then call thou, and I will answer, or let me speak, and answer thou me. In Job's anticipation of his time before God, he asked God to relieve him of his physical illness and to conceal his glory from God. Job knew that he could not stand in God's full presence and survive. How many are my iniquities and sins? Make me to know my transgression and my sin. Wherefore hidest thou thy face and holdest me for thine enemy? Wilt thou break a leaf driven to and fro, and wilt thou pursue the dry stubble? For thou writest bitter things against me, and makest me to possess the iniquities of my youth. Thou puttest my feet also in the stocks, and lookest narrowly unto all my paths. Thou settest a prince upon the heels of my feet, and he, as a rotten thing, consumeth, as a garment that is moth eaten. In further anticipation of his day in court, Job questioned God. He wanted to know if there was indeed some sin in his life that God was punishing him for. Job believed there wasn't. So Job's questions raised the possibility that God was punishing him for no reason. A punishment that made Job feel like he was a piece of rotting wood or cloth being eaten by a moth. Job's illustrations point out that his troubles were persistent and weakening. Hang in there. Someone once said, when you're near the end of the rope, tie a knot, hang on, and swing. When you're near the end of the rope, tie a knot, hang on, and swing. We are nearing the end of the lesson. So let's hang on and swing towards Job chapter 14. Man that is born of a woman is of few days and full of trouble. He cometh forth like a flower and is cut down. He fleeth also as a shadow and continueth not. And thus thou open thine eyes upon such an one and bringest me into judgment with thee. Job went on to describe the troubles of man in general. He identified that life is short and man is relatively powerless. Given man's frail condition, Job wondered why God would bring judgment and its accompanying distress on both the righteous and the wicked. Who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? Not one. Seeing his days are determined, the numbers of his months are with thee. Thou hast appointed his bounds that he cannot pass. Turn from him, that he may rest, till he shall accomplish as an hireling his day. Job asked God to turn away his watchful eyes and let those suffering have a reprieve, like a hired worker does at the end of a hard day of work. Job obviously was thinking about his own situation. He longed for a break from the suffering and pain. For there is hope of a tree. If it be cut down, that it will sprout again, and that the tender branch thereof will not cease. Though the root thereof wax old in the earth, and the stalk thereof die in the ground, yet through the sense of water it will bud, and bring forth boughs like a plant. But man dieth, and wasteth away. Yea, man giveth up the ghost, and where is he? As the waters fail from the sea, and the flood decayeth and drieth up, so man lieth down and riseth not, till the heavens be no more, they shall not awake, nor be raised out of their sleep. Job's thinking shifted to the possibility of dying and then starting life all over again. But he abandoned the idea, concluding that death does not give a person a second opportunity to live. Next, Job expressed his desire to be hidden in Sheol until his suffering passed. If God grant him his desire, he believed he will come back from Sheol with a renewed, obedient relationship with God. He said, "Oh, that thou wouldest hide me in the grave, that thou wouldest keep me secret until thy wrath be past, that thou wouldest appoint me a set time and remember me. If a man die, shall he live again? All the days of my appointed time will I wait till my change come. Thou shalt call, and I will answer thee. Thou wilt have a desire to the work of thine hands." But Job knew that would not happen. Instead, he believed God would continue to keep careful track of his life and hold him accountable for each misstep. "For now, thou numberest my steps. Dost thou not watch over my sin? My transgression is sealed up in a bag, and thou sewest up my iniquity." And surely the mountain falling cometh to naught, and the rock is removed out of his place. The waters wear the stones. Thou washest away the things which grow of the dust of the earth, and thou destroyest the hope of man. Thou prevailest forever against him, and he passeth. Thou changest his countenance and sendest him away. His sons come to honor, and he knoweth it not. And they are brought low, and he perceiveth it not of them. But his flesh upon him shall pain, and his soul within him shall mourn. Eventually, Job's life would end in death. A terrible process that will leave him with no recourse. If Job were to be vindicated, then he believed it needed to happen before he died. Not only do we have Job's, not only do we have Zophar's first debate with Job, we have Roman numeral 2, Zophar's second debate with Job. Zophar's second debate with Job. And letter A. Zophar confronted Job as being wicked. Zophar confronted Job as being wicked. This is in Job chapter 20. Zophar's second speech was also his last, for he did not speak in the third and final round of the debate. Zophar was not about to change his mind about Job. From his perspective, he was right and Job would always be wrong. Zophar built his thinking on reasoning and experience. He was sure of his thinking. Nothing Job said would dissuade him from what he believed was true. So Zophar attacked Job even more vehemently than he had before. His diatribe in Job chapter 20 is the most stinging speech recorded in the book of Job. For instance, Job chapter 20 verse 7 says, "Yet he shall perish forever like his own dung. They which have seen him shall say, where is he?" Zophar was sure Job would perish like his own refuse and leave no lasting memory of himself on earth. Zophar also stated that Job must have committed social injustice because he was a rich man. Because he had oppressed and had forsaken the poor. Because he had violently taken away an house which he buildeth not. Job chapter 20 verse 19. Again, Zophar spoke dogmatically without any evidence. In the climax of his speech in Job chapter 20 verse 23, he heartlessly declared, "God shall cast the fury of his wrath upon him." Job could only respond in dismay. Letter B. Job responded in dismay. He responded in dismay. This is in Job chapter 21. We all know people who spend too much time saying too little. Winston Churchill once dealt with such a person in a most unique way. The man said to Churchill, "You know, Sir Winston, I've never told you about my grandchildren." Churchill responded by clapping the man on the shoulder and replying, "I realize it, dear fellow, and I can't tell you how grateful I am." Churchill responded in gratitude. But Job did not respond in gratitude. He responded in dismay. A tourist traveling down a mud path in Africa passed a young boy walking down the path wearing only one shoe. The tourist stopped and asked the boy, "You lose a shoe?" "Nope," the boy replied, "just found one." The boy responded with quick wit. But Job did not respond with quick wit. He responded in dismay. Job no doubt sat aghast at what he had just heard. He responded as a wounded person. He wondered if anyone would listen to him. Job chapter 21 verses 1 to 6. Job then countered Zophar by saying his assumption couldn't be true, for the wicked often prosper. Sometimes the wicked prosper and live a long life. Job chapter 21 verses 7 to 16. And ultimately, death comes upon both the righteous and the wicked. Job chapter 21, verses 17 to 26. You can read all these passages for yourself. But what we'd like us to do now is to look at Job's conclusion in Job chapter 21, verse 34. "How then comfort ye me in vain, seeing in your answers there remaineth falsehood?" Job concluded that Zophar's reasoned thinking provided no comfort to Job because it contained falsehood. Zophar had two debates with Job. In his first debate with Job, Zophar confronted Job as being simple-minded. And Job responded in defense. In the second debate with Job, Zophar confronted Job as being wicked. And Job responded in dismay. The book of Proverbs identifies and describes several types of characters. Zophar's confrontational speeches to Job and Job's responses depict the character types found in Proverbs. Zophar and Job exemplify some of those character types. The character types taught in the book of Proverbs are as follows. The fool hates knowledge, lacks wisdom, thinks he is always right, teaches without understanding, meddles or causes quarrels, and speaks every thought. The scriptural references for this and other character types are found in your notes. The wicked offers abominations to the Lord, is far from the Lord, speaks perversely, devises evil imaginations, bears the fruit of sin upon sin, and lives deceitfully. The simple is spiritually complacent, is easily led astray, lacks insight, believes everything he hears, and has no foresight. Zophar accused Job of being simple-minded. Job responded that Zophar and Job's other two friends were the ones who weren't very wise. He sarcastically suggested that they were so wise that wisdom would die with them. The scorner enjoys criticizing others, is characterized by anger, will not accept correction, needs correction, causes strife and division, and is an abomination to men. Zophar showed some characteristics of the scorner. The sluggard has no care for future needs, daydreams a lot, but doesn't do much, lets little things hinder his work, is not a self-starter, does not face challenge, and seldom finishes what he starts. Zophar, who have called Job a sluggard, but his inactivity was due to his extreme circumstances. Job's former days showed that he was a diligent person. The wise knows the Lord and lives accordingly, possesses understanding, accepts correction, speaks accurately, tenderly, and carefully, walks prudently, and gives godly guidance and direction. Between Zophar and Job, Job was indeed the wiser. The question is, which character types are part of your own life? Are you the fool who hates knowledge? Are you the wicked who offers abominations to the Lord? Are you the simple who is spiritually complacent? Are you the scorner who enjoys criticizing others? Are you the sluggard who has no care for future needs? Or are you the wise who knows the Lord and lives accordingly? Which character types are part of your own life? Read those scriptural references in your notes to decide who you really are. Most gracious God, in depicting different kinds of people or character types, the writer of Proverbs appears to be contrasting each of these types with the ideal wise person you have for us. Help us then to identify our own character type and have more wisdom, O Lord. Let us say with your Son Jesus, not my will but thine be done. Have thine own way, Lord. Have thy own way. Thou art the potter. I am the clay. Mold us and make us after the wise person you would like us to be. Hear this our prayer through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.